What's going on, sports fans? Welcome into another edition of the Glass Half Full, an ESPN Pensacola podcast with me, your host, Jordan Glass. Thanks so much for tuning in. Just go ahead and dive right into it on today's show. The Florida Panthers are two games closer to lifting Lord Stanley's Cup after they take care of the Edmonton Oilers 4-1 in Game 2 of the Stanley Cup Finals last night. Four unanswered goals by Florida. Kind of got jump-started when Alexander Barkov got knocked out of the game on what some people thought might have been a little bit of a cheap shot. I'm not really going to kind of get into the back and forth on whether it was or wasn't, because, I mean, it's hockey. You're going to get hit hard. Florida fans, Florida players maybe not have been necessarily thrilled with that happening. Of course, Barkov, their captain. You don't want to lose your captain, especially in the Stanley Cup Finals. So that kind of woke the Panthers up, kind of lit a fire under their you-know-whats, and go and rattle off four unanswered goals and two by Evan Rodriguez in the third period. So Florida really kind of bounced back. It looked like Edmonton was going to maybe be able to make an interesting series out of it last night. At the start of the game, they come out and hop out to a quick 1-0 lead. But the Panthers at home just did exactly what we expect the Panthers at home to do, and that's be dominant for the rest of the way through the game and win. Bobrovsky stopped 18 shots from the Oilers in that game last night, and it's just one of those things where Florida's got the momentum right now. I think if you look at the NBA Finals and the Stanley Cup Finals, they mirror one another, right? The Oilers and the Mavericks, good teams, definitely deserve to be in the spot that they're in, and teams that are quality of a championship team. Like, if these teams were to battle back and win their series, it wouldn't surprise me one bit. But right now, they're just unfortunately going up against two teams that are just playing better, playing more collectively as a group, and they just are on a mission, it seems like. It seems like the Celtics and the Panthers, they just, from the beginning of the postseason, it's been their mission to go and win the championship. And so I think really that's one of the problems for the Oilers, is that they're facing against a Panther team that just is ready to win a championship and wants to lift that cup up. And they're not going to let anything stop them and get in the way. So they've got a 2-0 lead now, two games from taking that series overall and lifting the cup. So definitely going to be interesting there as far as how that series plays out. Can Edmonton get it on track, especially once it gets home for them? Once it gets on their home ice, can they steal a game or two and make this an interesting series? It's kind of the same thing. Again, the Stanley Cup Finals and the NBA Finals very much mirroring each other. Can the Mavericks get a couple at home, make this a little bit more of an interesting and competitive series than what we've had so far through the first two games? Dan Hurley, talking about the NBA, he turned down the Lakers. Not just the Lakers, but 70 million big ones. Yeah, they were going to make him one of the top five, top six richest coaches in the NBA. And he said no. He said, I'm going to stay at UConn, and we're going to go for that three-peat, which I think is super, super admirable, right? I think that is definitely something that you got to tip your cap to Dan Hurley on that, right? To want to turn down, first and foremost, that paycheck, to turn down an opportunity to live in L.A., to leave UConn and live in L.A., talked about on that on yesterday's show, the difference in the weather. I mean, it's drastic. Difference in people is drastic, too, but that probably swings into a negative narrative, not a positive one, like the weather would. But still, to turn all of these factors down, to be the head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers, to turn all of that down, to go back to UConn, to finish what you started at UConn. He said he's very proud of the championship culture that they've built there at UConn, and he doesn't really want to leave that. So now the Lakers are looking to see where they go next. And obviously James Borrego from the Pelicans, the assistant coach from the Pelicans, still on that list. J.J. Redick going to still be on that list. He's broadcasting the NBA Finals right now, but we don't really know what's going to play out there. They haven't even interviewed J.J. Redick. So for all the conversations that have been had and all the information that's come out of J.J. Redick being, you know, one of the odds-on favorites to get the Lakers job, they haven't even really interviewed him yet, which I thought was very interesting. So we'll see what happens. I don't think the Lakers even really know what direction they're going to go now, because honestly, I think the Lakers thought they found their guy in Dan Hurley. I really do. I think the Lakers thought, we've got our guy. We're going to offer him this big deal that's going to make him one of the top paid coaches in the NBA. and really one of the top paid coaches in all of sports, to be honest with you. And we're going to get our guy. He's going to make us good. We're going to go win some championships with this guy leading the team and leading the organization. And he said no. It's kind of like when you've been talking to a young lady or a young guy, whoever it may be for you, and you think you found somebody that you can actually have a relationship with, and then you finally ask them to take that next step, and they say no. Then you're just kind of standing there going, what the heck just happened? I think that's the Lakers right now. Their head's spinning because they did not expect him to say no. So they've got to pick up the pieces and figure out where they're going to go from here on out and find that next person that they hope can come in and lead this franchise that used to be one of the most popular in sports. Now it's still a great brand. The LA Lakers brand is still a great brand, but it has definitely dropped off over the last little bit, right? Since the Kobe Shaq days, since the Kobe Bryant days, right? Those guys aren't walking through the building. Like, that era of Laker basketball is not happening right now. That brand, it's still a good, like I said, it's still a good brand, but it's not, like when you look at it now, it's the Los Angeles Lakers, not the Los Angeles Lakers, because the Clippers have come on as late too. So now you have the Lakers and the Clippers, two good brands of basketball inside the same city. So the Lakers have got to find a way to go find somebody that's going to help get them back to being the LA Lakers, like the Jack Nicholson and all the other celebrities sitting courtside LA Lakers. The best show in town. Because right now, that's not them. They got to find that guy. Thought they did, but Dan Hurley said, uh-uh, I don't need your money. Also, I found it funny that the governor of Connecticut came out and made a statement over the weekend. It was like, if he stays, the state of Connecticut is going to make sure that he is the highest paid coach in college basketball. I don't necessarily know if he has the power to do that because I think it's more of an athletic department thing at UConn and what their budget can handle. But, who knows? Maybe he'll put together a fundraiser and they'll make a donation to UConn basketball in lieu of helping out make that happen. So we'll see what happens there with Dan Hurley and his contract with UConn moving forward after that comment being made by the governor of Connecticut. Steelers in the NFL, speaking of head coachings, they have signed Mike Tomlin to an extension for 3 years. Tomlin has been with Pittsburgh since 2007. In that time, he's gone 173, 100, and two ties. Tough couple of years for them. They have not won a postseason since 2016. But Tomlin is the longest tenured head coach in the NFL. So he's definitely been sticking around quite some time there with the Steelers. And even when they don't have a successful season, like what we talked about, just mentioned, they haven't won a postseason game since 2016, right? They still, like last year, they still won 10 games. The disappointing end of the season, kind of a meh season if you're a Steelers fan. Lost in the first round to the Buffalo Bills. But you still found a way to win 10 games. That's that Mike Tomlin effect. Now you've added Justin Fields, you've added Russell Wilson, you've added some other key guys throughout the offseason, whether it's through free agency or through the draft or through trades. You've brought guys in. You've gotten rid of guys that you think shouldn't be there anymore. And I'm going to say this. If you're a Steelers fan, you should be excited about this upcoming season, right? You've got Russell Wilson back. And here's the thing. I've always said this in defense of Russell Wilson for what he dealt with in Denver. I think he got a raw deal in Denver. And that's honestly and truthfully, as of late, seems to be an issue. With the exception of Peyton Manning, it seems like quarterbacks, superstar quarterbacks who go to Denver seem to get a little bit of a raw deal, right? So I think Russell Wilson kind of fell in that situation. He was in a program, he was in an organization that didn't really do anything to help him, right? They didn't really do much to actually provide him with talent or protection on the field. They provided him with a head coach that he did not mesh with and did not get along with. So that created issues moving forward for that Denver organization, that Denver offense. Sean Payton and Russell Wilson did not get along well. So I think Russell Wilson was just in a bad situation there. I think you're going to see Seattle Seahawks version of Russell Wilson with the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think he's going to make better decisions. He's going to have better targets to throw to. He's going to have better offensive line to stand behind. He's going to have better weapons behind him in the backfield. I think he's with a better team. He's with a head coach that he meshes with and that he works well with in Mike Tomlin. So I think if you're a Steelers fan, you brought in Russell Wilson. Now you're extending the contract for head coach Mike Tomlin. You've got to be excited about the moves that they're making for the future of this organization because I think that they are making the right moves. I really do. I think the Steelers are going to be pretty good this upcoming season. I think they're good enough. It's a tough division they're in, right? I mean, you look at some of the quarterbacks. If Deshaun Watson is playing like the Deshaun Watson we know he can be, that's going to be crucial for the Browns, right? Joe Burrow in Cincinnati, that's going to be big. Lamar Jackson in Baltimore. You're in a stacked division at the quarterback position, but I think Pittsburgh could have an opportunity to actually win that division. Because Pittsburgh is, I think they're going to be a significantly better football team. And again, they weren't really that bad of a team a year ago. They won 10 games in the regular season. That's a winning football team. So I think they're going to take the next couple of steps. They're going to be even better. So I think it was big that they were able to sign Mike Tomlin there to a 3-year extension. Bill Belichick, reports are coming out that Bill Belichick will actually attend Tom Brady's New England Patriot Hall of Fame ceremony at the beginning of the season. Kind of some rumors and some whispers that maybe he wouldn't because there's just bad blood between him and Tom. Like he and Tom don't necessarily really get along. But of course, if you watch that roast, there was a lot of awkward moments between the players and Bill Belichick. It maybe makes you wonder if Bill Belichick actually does get along with most, if any, of his players at all. Right? Some reports coming out about Mac Jones having a little rough relationship with Bill Belichick there with the Patriots in his time there. Now he's in Jacksonville as a backup to Trevor Lawrence. So maybe this is a Bill Belichick thing that he's that type of coach that doesn't necessarily he's the tough side of Nick Saban, but he doesn't have that friendly, personable side that Nick Saban has, right? Like Nick Saban will dog cuss you at practice. And then he'll come to you in the locker room as you're getting ready to leave practice and invite you to come over to the house for dinner with him and Miss Terry. Right? Like, that's the kind of head coach Nick Saban is. Bill Belichick seems like the coach just dog cuss you at practice and then dog cuss you some more in the locker room afterwards. You know? Like, that just kind of seems from everything I hear from former players of his. So, a lot of bad blood between him and Tom Brady. Especially when Tom Brady left to go play for the Bucs and ends up winning a Super Bowl with the Bucs, and the Patriots seem to just fall off the map after that happened, because then it really does look like that Tom Brady was the reason that the Patriots were as good as they were all those years, not Bill Belichick. So maybe a little bit of an ego thing there. Definitely some awkward moments in the roast of Tom Brady that happened on Netflix a few weeks back. You can go back and watch it on Netflix for yourself. It's still there. Lots of awkward moments between those two. But it seems like Bill Belichick's willing to let bygones be bygones. Who knows? Maybe being at the roast, maybe kind of cleaned up some of those wounds, right? Like cleared up, healed some of those wounds, and they were able to kind of move forward and kind of rebuild that connection between the two of them. And maybe that's why now he's going to go. But I don't know. We'll see if he actually does, though, because it's still a little ways out. And like I said, this is just a report. It is reported that he is planning on going. So we'll see if it actually happens. Chiefs receiver Rashee Rice spoke to the media a little bit, made comments about the alleged incidents that he's been a part of, where there was the car accident, the situation that happened outside of a Dallas nightclub where he allegedly punched a guy. The charges have been from that, by the way, have been dropped, so he's not going to face anything there. But he's gotten multiple charges from that car accident that he will be facing. Said that he's going to use this as an opportunity to mature. And I think this is a great mindset to have from this situation. You're young. You just got into the league. You made some stupid mistakes. Probably was hanging around with some people you probably shouldn't have been. Let that influence you a little bit. Talking to some people you shouldn't have been talking to. Let that influence you a little bit. You made some stupid mistakes. It's an opportunity to learn. I saw a quote the other day that said, learn from the things in life because life is a lesson, because mistakes are life lessons, not a life sentence, right? Don't let something that you do when you're in your early 20s dictate the course of your life. Don't let a mistake you make when you're at the age of Rashee Rice dictate the path that you go down for your life. You can learn from it, or you can continue to just follow down that path and things will continue to get worse for you. And it looks like Rashee Rice has come out and he said, look, I'm going to use this as an opportunity to mature, to get better as a person, as a human being, and as a teammate and an employee, really, of the NFL. So I think it's great news to hear that from Rashee Rice. And I wish him nothing but the absolute best. And I hope he has a long career inside the NFL. And, I wish him nothing but the best and hope that we get to watch a lot of Rashee Rice, especially now that they have Xavier Worthy. Because let me tell you something, Worthy on one side, Rice on the other, that is going to be a fun offense to watch. Not that Kansas City's offense hasn't been fun, but you put those two guys on the field at the same time, that is electric right there. Some Major League Baseball to talk about. Something new that Major League Baseball has decided to do is play these games in London, right? They wanted to play these games in London just to kind of expand, right? We're seeing pretty much every professional league do this now where they're like, you know what? We want to do these things where we want to have these outreaches. You know, the NFL football is playing in South America. They're playing over in Europe. They're adding new locations that they haven't played in before, like Brazil this year with the game between the Packers and the Eagles, but neither team can wear green. I don't know what's going to happen there. I guess that's going to be a flag football game with both teams just wearing white t-shirts. I don't know how that's going to play out. But anyways, that's a different story for a different show. But Major League Baseball is trying to do that a little bit more. They have the series over in Seoul to start off the season. There's always, usually it's West Coast teams that will travel over to Seoul, Korea, and they'll play a series there that is usually about a week before the actual opening day. Just to kind of give them some time to get over there, play a couple of games, and then get back here and have a couple of days to rest and kind of acclimate back to being in the United States and the time difference and everything. But they've also added a game in London this year, and those games actually happen over the weekend between the Mets and the Phillies. And a lot of the players loved the opportunity. They loved the experience. The one thing that they came away from, though, was just saying that there was just too much downtime. Right, that maybe it was like they get over there and then it's just a lot of sitting and waiting for them to finally play one or two games. And I think Bryce Harper for the Phillies had a great suggestion. He said, why not bring 4 to 6 teams over here and play basically a round robin style tournament over the course of a weekend? Right? Like play. Take it on a Thursday through Sunday or something along those lines and have like a round robin tournament that happens in London. So there's more happening. It's more of an event. It's something that you can tune into. It's something that honestly and truthfully, Major League Baseball could probably make a buttload of money off of. And let's be honest, every commissioner of every sports league is always going to be happy to do that, right? Whether it's Adam Silver, Roger Goodell, whoever it is, they're going to be happy to bring in money for their respective league. So I think it's a great idea that Bryce Harper had of making it like a tournament that happens over in London. And it play it over a course of a 4-day weekend or something along those lines. And I think Bryce said maybe make it 4 to 6 teams. I think you just do it with 4, right? I think you do it with 4. You can do it on a Friday through Sunday. And the way you do this is you take the two teams that played for the American League pennant and the two teams that played for the National League pennant. You send them over there. They play in a tournament. You can even mix it up and have one American League team play a National League team if you want to do that. You have them play each other. Winners automatically advance into a semifinal. And then you find a way to seed it to where, you know, maybe it's a like a best of 3 series, right? You know, you take the 4 teams, so you have two teams in one game, two teams in the other. Make it a best of 3 series, something along those lines. Then you have an automatic bid that gets in. I don't know. There's got to be a way that we can figure this out. If we can have 12 teams in a college football playoff, we could probably have some type of round-robin tournament in Major League Baseball over in London that takes course over a week or maybe even a weekend. I mean, the NBA does this in-season tournament now, and that seems to go off pretty well, right? Like, that was very entertaining this past season during the NBA season to have these teams play each other in this in-season tournament. So there's no reason why we couldn't possibly have something like this happen over in London or in South America or over in Korea or Japan to kind of have, you know, that global outreach, but you're doing it in a fun, creative way that no other league is doing, right? Because the NFL is just kind of sending teams out to places and playing a game, right? And the NBA is just kind of trying to reach out through, you know, outreach programs, not really looking to play any serious games, but they're looking at, they have outreach programs that allow them to be a part of other countries throughout the world. But for Major League Baseball, you want to do it in a new, fun, and inventive way? I think Bryce Harper hit the nail on the head. Have a round-robin tournament of some sort. It takes place over a weekend or a week. Have 4 to 6 teams come out. Seed it however you want to seed it. Pick the teams however you want to pick it. That's all up for Major League Baseball to decide. And then you let it play out. And that is like an in-season tournament. And maybe, you know what, if you do this early enough, here's for all you my fellow 90s babies out there, you know, watch Jimmy Neutron on Nickelodeon, Brain Blast, here you go. Have the American League teams on one side, the National League teams on the other. The team that wins this round-robin tournament gets home field advantage in the World Series. That's how you do it. That's the interesting twist that you add to it, because you're going to have something that makes you go, right? So instead of it being the All-Star game or records or whatever that decides it, whether it's the National League, whether it's the American League, whoever wins this gets home field advantage in the World Series. I think that's a great idea. Sign me up. I will watch each and every single one of these games in this tournament happily, with a big smile on my face. And I hope Major League Baseball seriously considers this, because it could be a lot of fun. From Major League Baseball now to college baseball, looks like we have our final 8 for the College World Series. The 8 teams, the Omaha 8, as they are called. And we've got, this is going to be fun, right? This Southeast region that we live in here, it's about to be a battleground, man. Because you got 4 teams from the ACC, you got 4 teams from the SEC, and they're going to be battling it out to find out who is going to be the king of college baseball. And you've got Virginia, North Carolina State, Florida State, and UNC from the ACC side. From the SEC, you've got Texas A&M, Tennessee, Florida, and Kentucky. And it looks like we get started on Thursday night with some of those games. And some of those games are early matchups or games that we saw throughout the season that were pretty good games. One of those, Florida and Texas A&M, that is going to be a fantastic game there in Omaha in the opening round. So I think it's going to be great. I think it's even better that the way that they seeded this is that potentially there could be an opportunity here in the state of Florida. The 2 biggest athletic programs in the state of Florida at the college level, Florida and Florida State, there's an opportunity with the way that they have this seeded, with the way they have it bracketed off, that Florida versus Florida State could be your College World Series National Championship best of 3 series. How awesome would that be, right? I mean, you look at this field, Virginia, North Carolina State, FSU, UNC, Florida, Texas A&M, Tennessee, Kentucky, all of these teams have an opportunity at winning the title. This is going to be a fun College World Series because it's a lot of good baseball teams that are all going to be competing for that chance to win. And I don't know if you were paying attention to the Super Regionals, but the energy and the passion that was brought to that Super Regional, each and every team in a Super Regional wanted to get to Omaha. And the teams that got there are all teams with opportunities to take home the hardware at the end of this tournament. So I'm definitely looking forward to seeing what happens with that. One last thing before we go, looks like Caitlin Clark is expected to be a top alternate for Team USA. We talked about it yesterday. Lots of people are seemingly upset because she was not on the Team USA roster. And I get it. I hear all these people like, oh, it's BS. Oh, she should be led on the team. She's the most fan popular. You know, you want to grow the game. Well, all these fans love her. Well, again, it's not a game that is voted on by the fans. It's not a roster that's voted on by the fans. It's not an all-star game. It's not a mid-season all-star game. This is Team USA representing this country in the Olympics, which means there is a committee of people that sit in a room, much like with the college football playoff. They sit in a room and they have a list of players who they feel should be or should not be on this team. And they give their case as to why for each and every single one of them. And it probably takes hours and it's probably a painful process that they have to sit there and go through. But they go through each and every player and discuss why they should be on the team or why they shouldn't be on the team. It's not a popularity contest, right? It's not about who can get the most votes on social media. This is a serious, legitimate thing that a committee of people who understand and know exactly what they're doing with Team USA come up with these teams, come up with the rosters. There's a couple of different players on Team USA's roster that this, honestly and truthfully, probably their last go-around with an Olympic team. So should we kick them off and deny them their last shot at the Olympics and deny them their last shot at a gold medal just to put Caitlin Clark on because she's popular? Because let me tell you something, shooting from three-point line and shooting from the field, she's less than 40%. On the season, and both. I think it's like 32% and 37% is what she's shooting from those lines. So if we want to hold the WNBA to the same standards we would hold NBA, if that's what we really want to do with these two leagues, that's not good production. Fan vote and being popular with the fans is not enough for a thing like Team USA. I think being an alternate is a perfect spot for her. Somebody goes down with an injury, she'll probably be alternate number one, which means she'll be the first person to take that slot. Not to mention, she's a rookie in the WNBA. She's still got a lot of time in her career to make the Olympic team and to go and play and represent this country as a part of Team USA. So I'm not going to sit here and be some of those people that are upset about it and having this fake social media outrage that I see a lot of people have because Caitlin Clark was not on Team USA. Caitlin Clark was not on Team USA because honestly and truthfully, she's a rookie who's had an up and down rookie year. She's had moments where she's shown that, you know, hey, yeah, she can do some good things. And yeah, okay, her range is incredible. But the numbers really aren't there, right? I mean, she had 10 points in their last game when they played last night. I believe they lost. She had 10 points. She's not really elevating this organization in Indiana with the Fever like people thought she would. They're still losing games. They're still towards the bottom of the WNBA. So there's not a lot other than, oh, well, the fans love her. She's popular. That's great. But that doesn't get you on Team USA. So she's probably going to be an alternate. She'll have an opportunity to step in if somebody goes down with an injury or gets sick or for whatever reason can't make that trip. But for right now, an alternate is exactly the best spot for Caitlin Clark. Don't take away an opportunity for a veteran in the WNBA who's probably only got one more shot at playing for an Olympic team. Don't take their shot away to give it to somebody who's still got their entire career ahead of them to make Olympic teams. That's what it boils down to. Don't do that. That's not a good look, especially when those people deserve it, right? I'm not saying that these people are only getting these spots because, oh, it's their last shot. No, they also deserve it. I said it on yesterday's show. You look at the Team USA roster, that is a roster that can go win a gold medal. That's how good they are. So we'll see what happens when we get the Summer Olympics kicked off in July. And, of course, we'll have all the coverage on that for you right here on the Glass Half Full and ESPN Pensacola podcast with me, Jordan Glass. But that is going to do it for now. So thank you for tuning in. Hope you have a great Tuesday. I will talk to you tomorrow.